Triple Treat, Dustin Martin and the Richmond Football Club edged themselves into footy folklore, joining an illustrious group in the modern era. Up for grabs, who are the candidates in line to replace Reece Shaw as he steps away from North Melbourne's senior coaching position? Fox Footy's Drew Jones is part of the season review. Get ready to hear who's staying and who's leaving your club on the Centre Square podcast.
And I declare the winner of the 2019 Brownlow Medal, Nathan Clark of the Fremantle Football Club.
Shade from the mound. Needs to be his perfect years. He's got the most impossible goal. From inside the centre square, Boyce kicked the goal.
Hello all and welcome to the last but not least Centre Square episode of 2020 on 91.3 Sport FM, your football headquarters, which sounds sad, but cricket is already underway, of course, with the Sheffield Shield, so centre wicket is just around the corner. I'm Ethan Roth, joined by Bray Loveridge, and it's silly season, they say, coming up with all the player movement, and Fox Sports reporter, host of AFL Tonight and Fox Footy, Drew Jones is set to be with us soon. But Bray, how did you find the grand final, the Tigers? They ran out 31-point winners and Dustin Martin cemented himself in history, didn't he?
Sure did, Ethan. The Cats, they fell asleep after half-time. And Dustin Martin kicked a bag and won from the boundary. So, if anything, he deserved this year's Norm Smith more than the other two. Basher, yeah. Hooley robbed.
Okay.
The others.
I think he got 4 goals, 22 disposals, yeah. Which was 21 disposals, which is basically
the same. He should just hand back the 2017 Norm Smith to Basher Hooley and say, I've got 3 here, you can have one. Yeah. He got robbed.
He is very humble though, isn't he? I mean, he always takes the Norm Smith off, and yeah. Richmond were pretty good as well, you know, when Gary Ablett, they gave the Guard of Honour, they took their medals off to show their respect.
Yeah.
To arguably the greatest player.
Yeah, that was a good touch
of all time. But yeah, the Cats, they looked good, didn't they? Second quarter, first half, but then, as you said, they just fell asleep. But I saw something interesting. Dustin Martin, his 4 goals in total, he had the ball in his hands for 7 seconds. If you
really?
All up, yeah. Saw that on Channel 7 last night.
Yeah, right.
I think Ryan Daniels was saying that.
A good start.
But yeah, and I think the thing with Richmond is their list is still young, so I reckon they can keep going four or five premierships. Not getting too ahead of ourselves.
Well, if you just think back to 2018, Mason Cox pretty much stopped them from going
four-peat. Yeah,
which is a scary thing. Mm. And yeah, who knows what they could do next year back at the MCG if things are all back to normal, which I assume they will be. But
and
pretty scary. Well,
yeah, like you look at Hawthorn when they won their 3 flags, their list was a bit old, but Richmond, they still got like a very young list.
And the young players, they're standing up, like Shai Bolton, all those
Bolter,
they're all standing up, and then what, not even 25 ish.
And Jaden Short won the best and fairest last night.
Bit of a controversial one for you, Ethan.
I was not saying he doesn't deserve it, I was just a bit surprised that he got it, considering he wasn't in the 40-man All-Australian squad, and Grimes, Vlosten were. But, you know, he obviously would have had a consistent year. So
The best and fairest is done by the coaches.
Yeah, it's different to the Brownlow as well.
The coaches, it's pretty much like the coaches award for your club. And where did he poll in the Coaches Association award?
I wouldn't know. I don't think they do. Like, it's only like a...
Just the winner they announce.
Oh, no, they show like the top 10, 20 or so. Okay. But yeah, it was an unbelievable 2020, wasn't it? No year quite like it. We'll go through the final segments, including In Strife. The tally of the tips where the winner may or may not be here. They didn't. 3 other boys didn't come for the last episode, which is a bit poor, isn't it?
We should call them up if they're not here.
It's a bit hard. We're currently recording. But then the trade, which is why we've brought an expert, Drew Jones, in to see what clubs will be most busy as they shape their lists for 2021. We'll start off with In Strife. I've got it this week. It was going to be Cow, but other commitments and the other boys, I think they have work. So, three In Strifes. Adelaide-born wrestler Brendan Vink. He's using Tony Modra as his WWE ring name. It's a bit funny, but you have to give respect to Modra. He's a great... he didn't even give his permission, so he'll be expecting him to live up to the name. I think Tony Modra is the only Docker to kick 10 goals in a game. And obviously, yeah, he was a champion at Adelaide. High flyer.
Yeah, well, you would have been all over this, you big WWE fan you were.
Back in the day, didn't mind it.
No, you still love it. You're still tuning in on Fox 8, watching your WWE. You and Cow love it.
Yeah.
So you would have been all over that one when that came out.
But a bit weird using Tony Modra. I was expecting a world championship or something along those lines. Luke Dowhouse in Strife. A crucial moment in the match on the grand final. The ball was chipped near the 50 and he got in Tom Hawkins' way, resulting in a turnover. I actually missed it. Like, I was obviously watching the game, but I was at my brother's house and I think I was talking to someone and all of a sudden I hear everyone going crazy and I turn around and I just see the replay of Dowhouse getting in Hawkins' way. And that was when the Cats were really surging forward, so he just needed to get out of the big fella's way.
Yep. Leave a big space from the goal score up to the 50 for the big forward to lead.
Yeah.
Give him heaps of space. But
Coleman,
I always got told, if you're playing in a forward pocket, never go in the directly in front of the goals. If you go in there, you're going straight to the bench, is what I got told.
Yeah.
So the big forward can lead up. So stay out.
And North Melbourne, nothing against Reece Shaw here, but for stepping away as senior coach, but they must be feeling the heat with how they're going to, you know, piece everything together. You know, in saying that, they could get someone like a Michael Foss or a Paul Roos to fill the role. If they can do that, there might be a chance to improve, but it's still a long shot away, and that's probably a bit ambitious, but not sure who's going to take over.
Paul Roos, I would think, nah, he's no chance. But then when you think he's taken 2020 off from media.
Yeah.
So he's had a year away from, say, work. He's coming in. He could be fresh enough. So I want to go take on coaching again. So maybe he is a lead contender. Yeah. I don't reckon. Well, Voss, I'm not sure.
I mean, his record isn't great. I mean, he's done pretty well as a Port Adelaide assistant coach. At Brisbane, you know, things were tough. But yeah, I think Paul Roos, because, you know, 2005 flag, you know, another grand final. Like, he's got good experience and even did all right at Melbourne as well.
What about John Worsfold?
I think he just wants to stay in Perth. There was talks of Freo giving him some sort of mentor/ like footy department role to help Longmuir out. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen though.
Yeah, well, Worsfold, he's been flying in and out since when he started playing. So I think he'd just like to stay in Perth for a bit.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of other, like, who would else be, like, a candidate? They've still got time to
sort it out.
Yeah, Don Pike. No, he's signed as an assistant coach somewhere, I think. I think Sydney, he's signed as an assistant coach there, I'm pretty sure, hopefully.
Wait, what about, big one, Dean Cox?
Yeah, maybe.
Because he has been going up the ranks in the coaching over the last couple of years. He's the main assistant under John Longmuir.
Yeah.
So, maybe he's a contender.
Because
he's, obviously, he's upped his coaching game. So, maybe he could be a contender to go down to North Melbourne and have a stint there.
Yeah. And Matthew Boyd has gone to Freo, the former Western Bulldogs Premiership player. So, he won't be a senior coach, I don't think, anytime soon. But, yeah, we'll move on to the tips. The final tips... basically crowning the winner of the finals series.
Yeah, well, some of us had real good finals campaigns, some had real shocking ones. But we're going to chuck in a little wild card. Andrew Emberley, we're going to chuck him in. 2 out of 1. Has he got a correct tip for the Norm Smith from last week's show? So he gets 2 out of 1. So he's down the bottom, but really he should be in front because he's got... more than 100%, 150%. So, or 200% correct, whatever.
What can't the man do? Seriously.
Yep, he's all over it. And then Ethan, you're coming in fifth. 3 out of 9. No Norm Smith for you.
Shane Edwards, he was up to most disposals.
Yeah.
I think Short or him probably runner-up or would have won if Dusty didn't.
And then Cal Levitt, 4 out of 9, plus one for the correct Norm Smith.
Yeah, so he would be the same as me, but the Norm Smith has upped his game to one more.
Did he tip Geelong? No, he tipped Richmond.
Richmond, yeah.
Okay, so he was on...
Everyone tipped Richmond.
So was he on two?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's poor from him. And then myself, 5 out of 9, over 50% correct. So I'm happy with that. Obviously, finals are a hard game to tip. And then we've got a joint tie for the win. In the case of a tie, we award two trophies to Luca and Noah,
who aren't here,
and the king of not submitting their tips, so they get the away teams, so they get the correct tips because Geelong and Richmond won the prelim week, so they got correct tips for that when we all thought the home teams are going to win. So they got a two easy tips there, and they didn't get the Norm Smith, but 8 out of 9. Both impressive.
Them. And they're not here, they can't.
Yep, so I thought about calling them up, but too late to sort out that now.
Yeah.
But, yeah. 8 out of 9, they've struggled. Yeah, they've struggled... what do you call it? Normal season games.
But you could say they've saved it for when it matters.
Yeah, well, the big prize came at the normal season. Me and Cal, I'm pretty sure, tied on the top. So,
and we spoke about it a few weeks ago. We said we would award a best finals player. We haven't really discussed it, but I think we can all probably agree Dustin Martin is probably... the player of the finals, and he got the Gary Ayres Award from the AFL. So,
yeah, we're not even thinking about it. I reckon Dusty definitely up there. But back on the tips, just gonna award myself an award here quickly. Overall, regular season and finals combined, myself is up on top, and Cow is behind me by one vote because we're obviously tied and I beat him by one vote,
and I'd be behind Cow by two, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yep. I will take tipping crown for 2020. Tough year it was for tipping wise. Lots of neutral games.
Yeah.
Neutral grounds. The tipping king comes through myself.
And so. I think we've done pretty well to tally them up as well. We haven't lost any sort of tips. Sometimes it can take a while to go back and listen to the episodes and just see tips. But, yeah, we got it done in the end, which was the main thing. But stay tuned because coming up, Drew Jones is next on this final edition of the Centre Square podcast, the season review. Drew Jones joins us now. He's got a few days off this week, so we appreciate him coming on for a chat. Fox Sports reporter and host of AFL Tonight on Fox Footy. Drew, welcome. Thanks for your time.
Boys, thanks for having me. How's it going?
Yeah, going well. Great. You?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Just some announcements in Melbourne are coming out of our full lockdown. So, pubs are open and restaurants tomorrow. So, yeah, which is, very exciting. And you guys have just been living a life over there in Perth.
Yeah. It's pleasing to hear that, it's starting to get back to normal over there.
It's great to hear.
So you're originally from Perth, which is what we like to hear, and actually did some stuff for Sport FM a few years back, before working for Channel 7, and then moving to Sydney in 2014 to then Melbourne 2 years later. Tell us about your rise in the industry, and when did you know the sports media scene was sort of your thing, and was it always an interest as a kid, and were you a good sportsman yourself?
I'd like to say that it was because I was good at sport, but that's probably not quite right. I love sport, and I guess it kind of just sort of transitioned into being good at English, and I just wanted to write about sport, really, write columns in the paper and interview players and watch games and talk about it, and that was where it probably started. So I never really wanted to get into TV, to be honest, but, when I was at uni, I did the sports editing part of the paper at Curtin and, you know, wanted to write features and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, TV only happened because my my former stepdad, he used to clean carpets for someone that worked at Channel 7. Her name's Sharon Dale. She's the voiceover for Cash 3, the old, that little like nightly lottery. So she got me a bit of work experience at Channel 7, which probably ignited the interest in TV a little bit. Got to know Ryan Daniels, who you guys would probably know quite well, yeah, at Channel 7, and Blake Johnson, who's now over here in Melbourne. Yeah, and then once I graduated, I think everyone coming out of media as their undergrad, they just assume that it, you know, something will pop up, but really nothing did. So I moved away for a little bit and played cricket over in England and sort of faffed around for a while. And then Sport FM posted something on Facebook, basically, that they were looking for employee or, you know, a new employee to help out. So I just came in and sort of learnt the ropes a little bit, and they threw me in the deep end, it'd be fair to say, hosting the 12 till 3 afternoon spot. And yeah, I remember the first time that I did the hosting. I reckon the first bit of audio that I tried to throw to, like, I hadn't formatted it correctly and it just wouldn't work, and it just would have been horrible radio to listen to. Me just, you know, slowly drowning, trying to work out what to do next. And I reckon I could have walked out of the studio just about in that first bad break and never come back, you know, because I was just felt so out of my depth. But somehow got through that first couple of hours, and then Colin Minton said to me that if you come back for the second day, then you make it further than most people. So just kept sort of battling through. Yeah, and then I ended up going back to uni and doing the postgrad at ECU with Joe McManus. And she was really good to me. I probably, you know, made it pretty clear to her that I wanted to go down the sport route. And that was what I wanted to do with my career. And she made every effort to help me to sort of do all my assignments on sport-related stuff and all my work experience in sport. So I went over to Sydney and met everyone at Fox Sports. And I happened to hit it off with the news director at the time, Gary Burchett, who now works on the IPL producing cricket and stuff like that. And hit it off with him, and he said to Joe that, you know, maybe there might be a spot for me if I wanted to move over to Sydney to do some work. And Joe is very persuasive, and she said, you know, why don't you start up an internship at Fox Sports? And then Drew can be your first intern. So by the end of the year, which I think was 2013, they'd started up a news internship at Fox Sports. So I got that and moved to Sydney, and yeah, and then came to Melbourne in 2016. You know, obviously being from Perth, Melbourne's probably a better fit, you know, sport-wise. You know, always loving AFL and cricket. So, yeah, that's probably the long version of how I got to where I am now.
Yeah, and it's good that you are kept pushing. Like, you came in the second day when you were at Sport FM, and, you know, didn't just quit or walk out the door like you might have felt like.
Of course.
Yeah, and mate, that's what it's all about, is early days when you feel out of your depth or you don't really know what you're doing. You just got to, you know, you throw yourself in, and because that's the only way you're going to get good at it. So, you know, like when I started at Fox Sports News, you know, I'd done probably about 5 paid shifts to Channel 7 at that point. And, you know, usually with Channel 7, when you're just starting out, it's obviously a 6 o'clock bulletin with only about 2 or 3 minutes of sport. So there's not much for you to do. You know, you might just do an LVO or a VSV that goes for about 40 or 50 seconds. So, you know, you don't get through the, you don't get the reps, I suppose, and get used to doing it. But 4-hour news, and you've got to cover everything from all over the world. So, yeah, threw myself in, and yeah, that was the key to getting extra responsibility. And then they, after the 3-month internship was up, they wanted me to stay and put me on the permanent roster. So, yeah, I guess that, you know, if I had walked out of Sport FM that first day, who knows where I'd be now? Probably working in a shoe shop or I don't know, Coles or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Most people recognise you from your Fox Sports and AFL Tonight duties, on top of your work with the Herald Sun and boundary riding for K-Rock Radio. Behind the scenes, how scripted is it on TV, reading off the screens, and how does it work in terms of sharing it with Kath Lachlan, who is the other host of the show?
Yeah, so in terms of scripted stuff on telly, if you're at the desk and you're reading, which I do occasionally, that's all pretty much scripted out in the teleprompter. So, you know, if you've got a 25-minute program in the lead-up to going on air, like, you're going to go through every single word with a fine-tooth comb. You know, you want it to be exactly how you want it, and it to suit your style and your voice and all that. So you spend a fair bit of time preparing to make sure that everything's the way that you want it, and obviously to make sure that it's all accurate and there's no factual errors. So, you know, that's very important as well, because, and it's something that I've probably learned a bit as time's gone on, is that, you know, you have to be, you know, really vigilant with almost every word, because, you know, yeah, the timings have to be perfect to sort of get out of the show at the right time and finish up. So you don't want to waste any time mucking around earlier in the show. That's something that become a lot more clear the longer that it's gone. When you're out on the road and out in the field doing live crosses and stuff, I guess you know, that's a bit more off the cuff. You have a general idea of what you want to talk about and what the big news of the day is, or, you know, the news is where you are. But you've got a bit more license when you're out on the road doing crosses, so that's something that, you know, I really enjoy, and that's probably why I liked radio so much, is that, and you guys doing a podcast would know that, you know, you've got a bit of a license and a bit longer of a leash to talk about things and, I guess, show people your in-depth knowledge. So that's what I try to do when I'm out on the road. In terms of sharing with Cass, she's a Perth girl as well. I don't know if you guys have or you know much about her. Mm. She went to Curtin University and she moved to Sydney as well. And yeah, she's a rising star, that's for sure. She's shot way past me, and leaving me in the dust. But yeah, it's great to work with her, and she's getting a lot of great experience doing stuff for Fox Footy and Fox Cricket. So we'll be seeing a lot of her, that's for sure.
Yeah, doing a lot of the stuff in the test matches as well in the cricket. But give us a taste of what a day in the life of, you know, your job is, and who are some of your favourites to work alongside? So obviously there's a lot of former players in the industry these days. So is it ever surreal?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, yeah, it's sometimes I think, you know, I get on quite well with Joey Montagna and Nick Riebolt, who spend a bit of time at Fox Footy. Roo loves his NFL, like he's a massive American football fan, and he's got about 3 different fantasy teams, and there's a Fox Footy league that a few of us are in. So whenever he comes in, he just wants to talk, you know, NFL and do trades and stuff like that. I guess, you know, I don't think too much of it now, but, you know, if you had said to me 10 years ago that I'd be in a fantasy league with Nick Riewoldt, I guess it's a bit of a pinch yourself kind of moment. But, you know, when it comes down to it, they are just everyday people, I guess. And, you know, the reason they excelled in their career, which happened to be footy, was because they're so dedicated to their craft, and that shows up in their media work as well. And so, you know, I guess they end up being pretty like-minded people that are easy to get on with. I like working with David King. You know, He's got strong opinions, and not everyone likes him, but he's probably the hardest working analyst that I've seen. You know, he spends a lot of time in at the office doing his research, sitting down with producers to go through match vision and pick out stuff that he thinks is relevant. He's really ahead of the game in the way that he analyzes stats, and I think he's a jet. A day in the life of Fox Sports News. Well, at the moment, working in Melbourne, we had a few layoffs earlier in the year before COVID hit. So we're a pretty small team now, but obviously it has changed a bit this year. But normally, you know, you get in the morning and you've got a bit of a schedule of what is on for the day. So there's always generally in Melbourne, you know, there's a mix of press conferences and teams are training. So you kind of map out what you want to do and what you think the big stories are, you know. So, you know, I might take my cameraman out to Collingwood and film them training, and Nathan Buckley will speak, and then we might be able to nip over to Richmond or where Melbourne are training to have a look around as well. Often we team up with other reporters, you know, to make sure that we've got everything covered so we can get across everything, you know, that we've done for the day, and then we come back and go through it, pick out the best grabs and the best vision, put together packages and look lives. So can be quite busy, and you know, you have to be pretty versatile, be able to edit, you know, sometimes use the camera and shoot as well. You know, you can be creative, and you know, being able to use the knowledge that you've built up over the years, like you guys would know, you know, following footy your whole life, you probably actually don't realise how much you do know and how much knowledge you've got stuffed away, you know, in your brain. And so being able to utilise that as part of your job is, you know, it's pretty awesome to be able to combine the passion you have for sport with your job. You know, it doesn't feel like a job all the, you know, very often. There are always things in your career that are going to be, they're going to be repetitive, you don't love doing, but there's a lot of moments where you really, I guess, think about and reflect on how lucky you are. So, you know, I've been at Fox Sports over 6 years now, and there haven't been too many times where I've, you know, woken up in the morning and not wanted to go to work. So it's been a great ride so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a certain point, a certain part of what you do that fulfills you the most? Do you have a preference when it comes to writing on radio or in front of the camera? Because we've seen you've also liked to edit and produce some of your own content.
Yeah, like recently I did a Gary Ablett sort of career look back, and that sort of thing can be pretty rewarding to go back and find a lot of vision and spend some time, you know, trying to, you know, honour Gary in some way, you know, some small way. And you want, you know, you want the people watching to feel something. You know, a few people watched the story, which was about 4.5, almost 5 minutes of Abbott's best highlights and telling the story of their career, and they said that it made them emotional, or that it gave them, you know, shivers down their spine watching. You know, that can be pretty rewarding to give people at home, you know, something that they enjoy and they can help them reflect on the great moments of someone's career, or, you know, and they can relate that back to their lives as well. So doing stuff like historical stuff like that is, you know, it's really good fun. What else is rewarding? I think sometimes, you know, telling people stories can be really important. You know, what makes people tick, finding out, you know, things about people that you didn't know or that people might appreciate, and that's sometimes that gets a bit lost because, you know, we get so obsessed with, you know, rumour and innuendo, or, you know, who's arguing with who. And sometimes we don't get to tell these stories of people who've achieved great things or, you know, overcome a lot of adversity. So the more that we can do that, the better, you know, for the industry. You guys will have noticed that if you scroll through Twitter, or if you go to the Herald Sun or Fox Footy's websites, you know, there's a lot of clickbait and there's not a lot of, like, genuine, heartfelt storytelling. So the more that we can do that, the better, I think.
Yeah, don't, no doubt. I think that's, yeah, probably an issue. But before we crack into some trade talk, no doubt you followed the AFL closely this year. What did you make from the weird season and then Saturday's grand final?
Yeah, it was a weird season, there's no doubt. You know, from a work point of view, you know, no footy in Melbourne was very strange. It was hard to predict. You know, there was probably a point in the season where I thought, Richmond are starting to turn things around, and I was a bit sort of fearful that they were going to charge home and win the premiership, given what happened off the field with the Tigers this year. I think they sort of lost that fairy tale vibe, you know, the feel-good factor with the Tigers in previous years after they'd sort of laid dormant for so long. That sort of footy karma, I thought, was going to catch up with them after the breaches they had in the hub and the drama with the Cochins and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, it was remarkable, really, that they were able to continue to perform to such a high level on the field when they were going through so much off the field. I guess it's a credit to them, and they said that they used it sort of as a bit of a us versus the world mentality, or with a chip on their shoulder. I mean, I guess whatever you can do to motivate yourself. If it works, then I guess it's a success. I enjoyed the rise of St Kilda under Brett Ratton. I thought that was a great story. You know, that there were some patches in the season where Gold Coast were playing some good footy, watching their young players sort of flourish, you know, like Jack Lukosius becoming one of the best rebounding halfbacks in the comp, and Isaac Rankin having those few weeks where he really shone. Obviously, Matty Rowe at the start of the year was great to watch for the 4.5 games that he played, and you know, even Noah Anderson looks like he's going to be a Jet. So, I enjoyed a lot of the season. Midweek games was something a bit different, but I didn't mind it. It was a very weird season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess the Tigers are probably deserving winners of the flag, but I'd like to see someone else bob up now. Hopefully the Eagles, but if not them, then someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Of course the Tigers, they had a patchy start after the restart and then suddenly all guns blazing. But we'll go through most of the clubs and touch on some contract speculation, starting with some of the big names. And one of those is Brad Crouch, who was linked to Port Adelaide, but that's becoming less likely as he's nominated St Kilda. Do you expect this to get done?
Yeah, I think so. Now that Brad's made a decision on where he wants to go, and the Saints, they do have a bit of salary cap room to play with. Like, if you remember a few years ago, the Saints, they sort of had a swing at a few big names. Andrew Gass, they put a big contract in front of. But they weren't able to land the big-name free agents in that time. But what they did do is they made sure they didn't just spend the money, you know, carelessly. So the fact that they've been able to keep a little bit of room in their cap means that now that they're a bit more of a destination club, they can actually get people in, and they've got the money to do it. So they recruited really well last off-season, and Brad Crouch really is it's a perfect addition to that midfield. You know, you're probably watching them in the finals, particularly against the Tigers, everyone was thinking to themselves, you know, they're one or two, you know, class players short of really taking it up to the Tigers. So Brad Crouch is going to be a really great addition to them.
Yeah, and Collingwood have been one of the most talked about clubs of late. Where did you see the Adam Treloar and Jordan Degoe situation heading?
Yeah, remarkable, isn't it? Yeah, Adam Treloar, in some, like in many ways, he kind of has seemed like Nathan Buckley's, you know, not protege, but just someone that who's Buckley's been able to groom since he's come over from the Giants into being, you know, a really respected leader and a dynamic midfielder. But whatever, like for whatever reason, and I'm sure it's a combination of, you know, probably slightly overpaying him. They signed him up until 2025. Now with COVID and the salary cap being, you know, shrunk back, you know, they've decided that he's the one that they're going to let go. So it, having spoken to Tommy Morris about this a few times, he's sort of led the charge with the story, it sounds as though the Pies have told him that, you know, he's no longer wanted at the club and they're willing to possibly trade a trade, you know, and they'll make it happen even if they have to pay a portion of his salary next season. You know, they'd rather pay $200,000 than $900,000. So I expect he'll go. You know, I think Collingwood have made it pretty clear that they don't want him. So it's really interesting to see where he fits in and at what club. You know, if Carlton or Melbourne could make space for him, he'd be a good fit there. The other one is Essendon, who have got a fair bit of salary cap space to play with. Obviously, his partner, Kim Revillian's going up to play netball in Queensland, so if the Lions or the Suns can make something happen, then that probably suits him. But, yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing Treloar at Collingwood next season, which is, you know, something, if you had told me that 4 weeks ago, I wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a very good player. I think the kicking's probably an issue, but yeah, surprising that Collingwood are, you know, happy to see him out.
Yeah, what about Jordan Goey as well?
Oh, yeah, I think he stays. He's, when the Carlton stuff came out, I thought that sounded like a bit of a smokescreen, you know, that maybe the Goey and his father were kind of drumming that up behind the scenes, to sort of show that supposedly other clubs, you know, were interested in coming to the party with big offers. But yeah, I think Jordan may well have found through this process that other clubs aren't as willing to take a risk on him maybe as he thought they would be. You know, as far as output, you know, statistically, he's not jumping off the page. You know, he kicked 24 goals in 15 games for the season or something like that. The most he's kicked in the season, I think, is 36 or 37. So I think he's still got a bit of work to do to go in terms of becoming a consistent elite player of the competition. He has his moments. You know, we saw that against West Coast in the elimination final. He kicked a big goal. And he's certainly got a great highlight reel. But it seems to me that... maybe the interest in him wasn't as prolific as he thought. So, 2-year contract, I think, is on the table from Collingwood, so I assume that he'll start by.
Probably expect him to take that.
Yeah. With Essendon, we know Joe Danaher and Adam Saad are on the outer, but can they retain Orazio Fantasia, Zach Merritt and Matt Guelfi?
Well, I think Fantasia has picked Port Adelaide as is his destination, so I expect he'll go, and I think it's probably for the best, to be honest, but we haven't seen Orazio play consistent good footy and be fit for a couple of years. So it's been a while since we've seen Orazio's best. So maybe a change of scenery and, you know, new medical staff might be good for him. I would expect that Matt Guelfi would probably stay, unless he's got a good offer from Fremantle or West Coast to come home. And then Zach Merritt, I think he's got a year left to run on his contract, and it sounds as though he sort of said to the club that I'm happy to see that out. But, you know, if a club came with a big offer, you know, contract-wise for Merritt and also, you know, with a decent trade offer to Essendon, then, you know, if Merritt thinks that there's a chance that he might leave when he's out of contract anyway, then maybe it's in the Bombers' best interest to to trade him now and get the best they can for him. So I wouldn't say that the Zach Merritt situation is done and dusted, because we've still got, you know, a few weeks until the trade period, you know, well, once it opens and then it closes, there's still plenty of time for something to happen. So I think Merritt's watched this space.
Yeah, and I think, well, Essendon should be doing everything to you know, keep him, because, you know, they probably see him as a future captain. But where do you see controversial Fremantle forward Jesse Hogan playing in 2021, as well as Connor Blakely?
Yeah, not sure about Blakely. I guess it's pretty clear that he's not in Justin Longmuir's best 22. So, yeah, like, if he sees himself as an inside midfielder, Blakely, there's probably not a lot of clubs really looking for a slow, or like slowish, you know, inside guy with, you know, okay skills but not elite. Like, you know, as far as a midfielder goes, Blakely doesn't do anything really, really well. And I thought he'd sort of found his spot as a rebounding halfback. You know, so not sure about Blakely. He's got a year to run on his contract, so I'm sure that he'll, you know, his manager will be making some calls and seeing if there's any interest. But you might find he ends up, you know, back at Freo and trying to earn his spot in the side over the pre-season. And, you know, Fremantle's a pretty good place to be right now. You know, it's a really exciting young list. You know, Justin Longmuir was obviously doing a great job. And Fremantle are only going to get better with a more settled year in 2021. You know, hopefully, you know, consistent home games and no hubs, and that's going to be good for the Dockers. So, yeah, I don't think staying would be such a bad thing for Blakely. As far as Hogan goes, it does feel like you need a change. I saw, I think it was Mark Stevens suggest today that the Tigers might be a nice fit for Hogan.
Really?
Sort of a bit less pressure to perform, sort of as that third key forward, with Revolt, you know, coming towards the end. You know, Jack might only have 1 year left, you know, and having won 3 premierships, you know, with a young family, you know, he might not feel the need to keep playing forever. To have Hogan to bring into the side, you know, after, say, a year in the system at Tigerland would be a pretty nice fit. And maybe they sort of back their culture to help him fit in and amalgamate really well. So, yeah, that was an interesting suggestion. I've heard Sydney mentioned as well. The Swans need a key forward, you know, with Buddy and Sam Reed on the way out. So that one would make sense as well.
Yeah, I find that saying Hogan to the Tigers potentially, because, yeah, I'm a Freo fan. He's getting paid about 800K a year, so, I mean, I'm a fan of him when he's at his best, like we saw in Melbourne. But yeah, just obviously a lot of off-field trouble, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, where he is in next year.
Jesse's he's really no different to you or I in terms of he's trying to find his way in the world. You know, losing his dad, he got sick with cancer. Like, he's been through a fair bit, and he also happens to be great at footy, you know, an elite footy player at his best. But he's also just trying to, you know, find his place in the world. And people expect so much from him, and people expect a lot from AFL players. I think we got to cut him a little bit of slack, but ultimately, you know, he's getting paid a lot of money, and he hasn't performed. So the criticism will always come, but we have to try and bear a thought for him, he's going through behind closed doors.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yep, the Giants continue to see players walk out the door, but the one in everyone's mind is Jeremy Cameron, and of course, Tim Taranto potentially switching out as well.
Well, tell me more about Taranto. I haven't heard this one.
Yeah, well, I think they're just rumours, but obviously, he's from Victoria, St Kilda, I think, are interested, but yeah, I'm not sure. There might just be rumours at this stage. I think he won the best and fairest, so yeah, I think he's probably pretty settled.
Well, they certainly rate him. You know, there's no doubt they were delighted to get him where they did in the draft. I think it was pick two or pick three, maybe. Mm. But I remember thinking at the time when they got him, sort of having heard people talk about how talented Taranto was, I was like, oh, the Giants got another one. You know, it's like, how many talented mids do they need? And yeah, he was probably a little bit down this year when he came back from injury. It's tough when you, did he do a shoulder or something like that early in the season? You know, when you have your season kind of wrecked by a pretty major injury, that always makes things hard. But yeah, I mean, at this stage, having seen Jeremy Cameron walk out the door, and he'll probably go to Geelong, and you know, either as a free agent or through the trade, they've probably got a spare, you know, 800K in the salary cap. So having already had what I think it's up to about five or six players now announce that they want to leave, I don't think they'd be too keen to let anyone else go. They have been able to lock down Whitfield, Kelly and Cornelio to long-term deals. Toby Green signed up as well till about 2025. So they've got still got a fair chunk of their core locked in. But given that, you know, O'Halloran that wants to leave, and Jackson Hatley is out the door as well. Jai Caldwell, it's going. So they've lost a couple of young players. So, you know, if they can get to the draft and replace those and, you know, make sure they don't lose anything else, I think that's their priority at the moment.
Yeah, and two Coleman medalists in their forward line would be very damaging, you know, Cameron and Hawkins. But do you know if Harry Taylor's made a call on his future yet? And is Jordan Clark a certainty to be in the hoops next year? Or do you feel he wants to come home? Because, you know, as you said, the Cats, they're well placed in the draft, so they're going to have more kids coming through, which probably won't help Jordan Clark.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I've got a West Coast Eagles podcast, which I do with Daniel Garb. And we've been talking about Jordan Clark a lot. We think he'd be a great fit at West Coast. But Clark's quite a versatile player. You know, we saw him play some pretty good footy at half-back for Geelong when he first got drafted, and then I think they used him on the wing and then even maybe at half-forward for a period of time in his first season. Obviously, he wasn't able to get it together this year and didn't play much senior footy, had an injury as well. I mean, I assume he's out of contract unless he signed up last year. You know, he'd be coming to the end of his rookie contract. So I feel like he's probably gettable. Fremantle on West Coast should be interested because he's a, you know, the gun young player. So the difficulty for West Coast is that, you know, they've the last two trade periods, they've had these long drawn out negotiations with Geelong about Tim Kelly. It's like every year they don't want to have to keep asking Geelong, you know, for something. Like I'm sure it would get a bit tiresome having to keep sitting down with Stephen Wells and keep having these conversations with Brian Cook, being like, you know, how can we get this player off you over and over again? But Jarrod Brandao is a Geelong Falcon. He's from, you know, that area. And, you know, Brandao's sort of struggling to find his niche at West Coast and was a highly, rated young player. So, you know, maybe Brandao and pick 30 for Jordan Clark, and maybe a third or fourth rounder coming back the other way. You know, that would make a bit of sense.
Yeah.
If Clark does want to come home. As far as Harry Taylor goes, not sure. I mean, Harry's still playing pretty good footy. It feels to me as though the body's probably not as much as he keeps himself in great condition. He just looks like an old man a little bit now, doesn't he? The way he runs around, he looks like he can't bend over. So, probably, you know, if the Cats were able to get Brandao off West Coast, then they might feel that he sort of comes in as defensive cover, potentially, and if Harry does retire. But, yeah, I mean, Harry's always played his cards pretty close to his chest. So, I've got no idea. what he's going to do.
And I think Brown is a top 10 draft pick, I think. So, yeah, they're very talented, very, you know, highly, I guess, talked about. So, Isaac Smith is an interesting one. I think he wants a 3-year extension, or a 3-year contract. And at 31 years of age, some say, you know, he's asking for too much. Do you see another club bringing in Isaac Smith? And what value is he of, do you think?
Well, apparently Melbourne are keen. I think the Bulldogs tried pretty hard to get Smith at the end of last season, with sort of no success or to no avail. It makes sense that Hawthorn would try to cash in. You know, they need to bring young players to the club. So Smith's probably worth a second rounder, maybe a third. You know, he is 31, as you said, but he can still play good footy. If Melbourne are willing to give him a 3-year deal, you know, you're probably just giving him that extra year just to get into the club, and you sort of worry about it later. Because if they feel like they can, you know, sort of surge up the ladder or at least challenge a bit more strongly next season, then bringing someone like Isaac Smith is going to be really valuable. You know, experienced campaigner. You know what you're going to get from Isaac Smith. You can plug him in on a wing and you don't have to worry about it. You know, like, you know he's going to perform week in, week out. And that means then they've got their two wings sorted. They've got Langdon on one, they've got Smith on the other. And then, you know, they can just use Tomlinson as a defender. So it looks like a good fit. But only if Melbourne feel they can challenge. You know, if they think they're in the mix, then by all means, you know, bring in a 31-year-old and have a good crack at it. But, you know, only if you, there's no point trading for Isaac Smith unless you're sure that you're all in.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yep, Demons ball magnet Clayton Oliver has also been brought up. Is he any realistic chance of leaving the D's, or are people just making up for the sake of it?
No, I think this was real, but I think it was more that Oliver, he just wasn't sure exactly about the direction of the footy club, if they were going the right way. So I think the question was asked to a couple of clubs, like perhaps, you know, his manager made some phone calls, and he may have had a meeting with the club to talk about his future. That's not uncommon. You know, it wasn't as though he went in there into the meeting, let's say, with Josh Marnie and Simon Goodwin or with Gary Pert and said, you know, I want a trade, I want out. It was probably more along the lines of, you know, guys, I've just been thinking about my footy and my career and where it's heading, and, you know, I just want to be sure that we're going in the right direction and that, you know, we're all on the same page and that sort of thing. So I think it certainly wasn't a made-up story, but I don't think it was ever, you know, a realistic possibility of happening. It was more just the question was asked.
Yeah, and that gets happened. That happens a lot. We couldn't forget Ben Brown. Do you find it hard to believe the Roos have pushed Ben Brown out after just one poor season? And what do you think, what clubs do you think suits him best or are leading the race to sign him?
Well, it wasn't even one poor season. You know, it was about six bad games. In a year where there was a pandemic and the pre-season was all stuffed up. And yeah, I mean, I think there's a school of thought now that Ben Brown is just so one-dimensional. You know, that all you can do is kick to him on the lead and he marks it, goes back and hopefully spots the goal, but he doesn't do anything else. And maybe, you know, the days of those kind of forwards is over. Like, if you think about, like, Josh Kennedy at West Coast, like, you can imagine him, you know, running down defenders, laying tackles, you know, contributing in other ways, like, you know, maybe not as much now as what he used to, but he's always been a multifunctional forward. Jack Darling the same, you know, it's not just who all they can do is pick up the driver and smash it down the middle, but they can't pattern their approach shot the crap, you know. And I just don't think Ben Brown has any more weapons. And now that he's getting older, even less so. So it was certainly an interesting way to do it by the Kangaroos. You know, like he's a really nice guy. Like he's such a gentle soul and a caring guy. Does a lot of stuff, you know, off away from footy in the community that's really beneficial. So it feels a little bit like they kind of were shooting Bambi, you know, when you publicly end up forcing out a player who's much loved and had kicked 170 goals in the last four seasons or whatever. It just doesn't, you know, from a PR standpoint, doesn't look good.
Mm.
And that's probably the least of their worries at the moment.
Yeah.
But it sounds like Ben Brown to Melbourne is pretty much a done deal. So I think most likely Tom McDonald will probably leave. And then Ben Brown slots in. So, you know, like we said before with Isaac Smith, the Demons are fair dinkum about giving it a crack. They just want a full forward who they can pencil in every week and know that Brown's going to offer them a target, you know, to help out with Sam Wiedemann. So, looks likely that he'll get probably a 2-year contract at the D's.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, someone that has come out of the blue is Josh Dunkley. How do you see that playing out? Because the Bulldogs will not want to give him up easily.
Yeah, it really surprised me, this one. Having got to know Josh a little bit, because he's done some stuff at AFL Tonight, it seemed to me like he was, you know, on the path to becoming a Bulldogs great. But yeah, Essendon kicked the tyres and asked, you know, do you want to come and be our big dog in the midfield, you know, earn a bit more money? And they've also supposedly said to Josh that they're interested in Kyle as well. So his brother gets signed up to the Dons. Him and Josh get to play footy together, get the handsome pay rise, and, you know, if Josh Dunkley is at the footy club at Essendon in a few years' time, I could see him being the captain, potentially. Him and Andy McGrath kind of leading that club into the next their next era. And it feels like the Dons have just been crying out for a really physical inside presence who can just win his own ball, rip it out of the contest, you know, and either get a kick or find out a handball. They haven't had that since Job. So it's been a while. And, you know, Merritt's good inside, but he's probably better, you know, served doing a bit of inside, a bit of outside. You know, he's a skillful player.
Yeah.
And McGrath's great in traffic, but he's not that big body. So it feels like Dunkley would be a good fit. But, yeah, it was a surprise to me that it started to play out. But the more that I've probably thought about it, the more that it makes sense.
Yeah. So do you think he's going to go or...?
Yeah, if you gave me money to bet on where Dunkley is next season, I'd probably put it on it.
Okay, yeah, I think he'd be a good fit for them, as you said, what they sort of need in that midfield. But final one from us before some fan questions. Will short-term 1 or 2 year deals get done for like the older players such as Grant Birchall, Eddie Betts, David Mundy, Nathan Jones, and even Basher Hawley?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's been really hard for the clubs, and I feel sorry for the players as well, because we still don't have that final confirmation about the sizes for next year. But the magic number seems to be about 42, which means you've got to cull your list by 4. I guess with Basher, the only possible thing that could sway him is that he's, you know, he's now a 3-time premiership player. He's had about 3 or 4 soft tissue injuries this season, including popping his calf in the grand final. You know, maybe he just thinks, oh, well, you know, I've done it all. I've won it all now. And he can focus on his, he's got the Basher Hawley Foundation. Now, maybe he wants to put more time into that. Who knows? Mundy has to go on again. He had a great season. You know, he's been one of the most consistent midfielders over the last 10 to 15 years. He's a star. So hopefully he gets another contract very soon. Birchall thought he was good for the Lions this year, but he's standing in the way of Alex Witherden playing consistent footy. And they wouldn't want to keep Witherden out of the team for too much longer. So I'm not sure whether he'll play on. I think he did his hamstring in the last in that prelim final as well. Who else did you have for me?
So we had Eddie Betts and Nathan Jones as well.
Yeah, Betts will play on. Chris Judd said on radio that there's no way that they would have ended the season without giving Betts a farewell if he was retiring. So Betts will play next year. And Nathan Jones, I think, is pretty much guaranteed to get another contract, and they're going to give him an assistant coaching role. So that's sort of a clever way to avoid having to pay a coach because you're paying Jones in the salary cap for the players. So, yeah, I think he gets one more year. I don't think he'll play a huge amount of footy, but he'll be definitely a valuable member of the team and at the club.
Yeah, and one question I've just thought of also, we got the draft coming up in December. How much have you paid attention to the draft, and who are some of the guys you think are going to go pretty high, or the ones to watch out for?
No, that's a great question. All I really know is that I think the best player in the draft is going to be a Bulldog Academy player. But I don't know too much about the prospects and the young guys. I haven't been following it that closely. But I know that it's the analyst draft. There hasn't been much scouting this year because there has not much footy's been played in Victoria. So it's going to be the high tech, the new age analysts instead of the old school scouts, which are going to be helping to compile the list of the prospects. But I would suggest maybe have a look at Matty Barmer's work on Fox Footy or Cal Toomey on AFL.com because they're the ones that follow the young kids really closely.
Yeah, I think Jamari Ugle-Hagan's going to go one, and then Logan McDonald, Perth, I'm not sure if you've heard about him, but Perth Demon is going to go, Key Ford going to go pretty high as well. So we'll go move into these fan questions now. So thanks to everyone who sent in a question, not only today, but for the whole year. And remember, you can keep doing it at Centre Square Podcast on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter too. So, Drew, this first one's from Kai Jones, good friend of the show. We spoke about who's going to go out of Collingwood, but who do you think Collingwood's going to get? Because I think they're really desperately needing a key forward.
I thought that potentially they would be in the market for, maybe a Ben Brown or a Jesse Hogan, but we haven't heard too much about that. I mean, they're probably their number one priority right now is making sure that Nycheck signs a new contract. I think that Brody, he said to me in an interview during the finals that he really wanted to stay at Collingwood, but this is probably part of the issue they've got with Treloar is that they might not have much salary cap to actually play with, so they've re-signed Darcy Moore and we know that the goalie's going to stay, but I think retention of players is probably their first priority. I could see them having a crack at a key forward, but I couldn't tell you who. It feels like they've needed one for a while, and people have even spoken about the fact that potentially Mason Cox is gettable because he's getting paid fairly handsomely for not a huge amount of output.
Two good games every, few years in the finals.
Next question is from Lions of Brisbane. Pretty straightforward question. Most surprising trade you think will happen?
Most surprising trade? I have a yearly beer with, I've got one trade source and I have a beer with him before each trade period and he gives me a rundown of all the deals, but I haven't had the chat yet. So I haven't got anything juicy for you, but I think the Dunkley trade is the most surprising if it happens.
Yeah. Premiership player, star in the making. Last one from Gold Coast Suns FP. Who are the Suns targeting? Anyone?
Well, they've got Rory Atkins, who's coming in.
Four-year deal.
Yeah, which I'm interested to see how that goes. I think Atkins is a good player and a good team. So if they get good quickly, then Atkins will be a really nice acquisition. What do the Suns need, boys?
Not sure. I think they've got
a hell of a lot of young talent.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, they're starting midfield next year. You know, Anderson, Rao, Swallow.
Mm.
Who else? Tookie Miller. So, you know, they're pretty well stocked. Rankin up forward. Ben King, who's an absolute star.
Your Brandon Ellis, you know, as well, yeah.
Ellis has been good on the wing, so Atkins will slot in on the other wing. So maybe another medium-type defender, although Will Power went back there late in the season and looked pretty good. You know, a rebounding defender, you know, of the ilk of, like, you know, a Christian Salem type, you know, that sort of player. That would be good for them. You know, Lukosius is that taller intercepting defender. They could get someone, you know, a distributor to replace Jared Harbrow. That would probably serve them well. Other than that, you know, they look pretty well stocked. I mean, there's a chance that Andrew Law's going to be there next year.
Yeah,
but then when you think the amount of talent in their midfield, that's just what I was thinking about then when we're naming all those players. It might just be hard to get him in to that midfield with all the talent.
Well, the question is it worth getting him when you've already got these stars in the making who kind of need their time to develop, and if Trelaw comes in, is he standing in the way of that happening? So, yeah, and that's what they'd be weighing up at the moment. But they've got pick six, I think, to use, and they've got so much young talent that you think maybe they should be turning that pick six into a player they can use.
Yeah, that would be handy, that pick six. But, Drew, that's all we've got for you today. We really enjoyed and appreciate your knowledge and thoughts on, you know, what's going to happen in the coming weeks, as well as, you know, what you've shared about your career. And hopefully we'll keep in contact. But all the best until then.
Thanks, boys. Enjoyed the chat.
Thank you.
Cheers. See ya. We'll take a moment to thank the listeners from this year, from the beginning until now. You know, we love the support. And did you want to say anything, Bray, about the show this year, or, you know, what we've got planned?
Yeah, it's been a difficult year. We were originally going to plan. We came into the studio, and then suddenly I all had to go home back and use it on our phones, recording on there, and then back here. It's been a long year. I think we've done probably close to 30 episodes this year, I reckon. Mm. Actually, no, we have. We have done 30 episodes.
Yeah, we've nearly done 50 in total, which will carry on to next year.
I think this is the 31st episode of the year. So, yep, big year. And then also something that popped up. Tom Brown put out there that apparently Jared Schofield could be a chance for North Melbourne's senior coach.
That's Subiaco Premiership.
Yep.
But that's his son. It's interesting because his son Taj is going to get drafted to the Port Adelaide, so I'm not sure if that's going to have any impact on it. But yeah, Centre Wicket's coming up, isn't it, bro?
Yeah, we've already got a big episode lined up for, I think we'll release next week, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've already recorded that. That's ready to go. So can't wait for that.
Yeah, and I think, we've done pretty well this year, you know, but we've had a guest all but one episode in the middle there. So, we've done pretty well considering the circumstances. But, you know, that's right. As you said, stay tuned for some important and exciting updates on the socials. And we look forward to your company on Centre Wicket. But from the Centre Square podcast, that's it. Season 2 of the show complete on 91.3 Sport FM, your football headquarters. Thanks again.